This is the Human-Centric Investing Podcast with John Deal, where we look at the world of investing through the eyes of our clients. Take it away, John.
Hello, financial advisors. This is John Deal, Senior Vice President of Strategic Markets at Hartford Funds. Welcome to episode 25 of the Human-Centric Investing Podcast. Joining me today is Mike Lynch, Managing Director of Strategic Markets here at Hartford Funds. Welcome, Mike. It's great to have you back.
Hey, John. Thanks very much for the time. Appreciate it.
So we're continuing on with the topic of Social Security because it always seems to come up. In past episodes, we've discussed timing and filing strategies, but today we're going to focus a little bit on the general area of taxes. While this may not be the most interesting aspect of Social Security planning, it's important because, like timing and working, taxes are one of the factors that can reduce Social Security income, even if sometimes it's kind of hard to figure out how. I will also tell you, Mike, that taxes is one area I think you'll agree that, you know, fire up a lot of our clients, because I think their thought was, look, these Social Security benefits that I've earned were earned through taxing me, and now you're telling me that my Social Security benefits might actually be taxable. And I think helping people to understand how that happens, I think, is important, just so that, you know, the educated client can keep things in perspective. So, Mike, with that, are you ready to help me break things down for our audience?
I certainly try my best, JD.
All right, so let's get going. First, Mike, would you tell us when Social Security benefits are subject to taxation? Is it from the first dollar I receive, or how does it work?
Yeah, well, the way they calculate, and I think you're exactly right. You know, I travel the country as you do, and we do seminars, and boy, it gets a little uncomfortable when we get to the slide and we talk about taxation, because I think you're right. I think folks haven't really thought about that, didn't really realize that maybe a portion of the Social Security benefits taxable. So the way it's calculated is first take a look at their modified adjusted gross income. And usually I get some puzzled looks in the crowd, and I say, gosh, you know, let's make sure we're working with a tax professional first. Let's try not to figure that out on our own. But your modified adjusted gross income, we're going to have to add back in any tax-free income, which kind of adds insult to injury to some extent. Then on top of that, we have to add back in half your Social Security benefit. So if you're taking, say, you're collecting $2,000 a month, $24,000 a year, half of that, $12,000, is going to be added back in and added to that modified adjusted gross income number. Then based on that number, that's going to equal what they call your combined or provisional income. And then depending on where that's at, you may not pay taxes on your Social Security benefit, or you may pay taxes on a portion, or you may pay taxes on a large portion, a substantial portion. So the first step is really that calculation. And again, hopefully they're working with a good qualified tax advisor or their financial advisor knows what those numbers are. But then based on that, they'll go into these three brackets.
So, Mike, can you give me an idea of kind of where the caps are? Maybe we'll just take one example. If you have the numbers in front of you, let's take somebody that's married and filing jointly, right? Because that's kind of a fairly common thing. At what level will I not be taxed at all on any Social Security benefits that I'm receiving?
So married filing jointly, you come up with that combined income number. If it's less than $32,000, then none of your Social Security benefits going to be taxable. However, if you're go ahead.
Yeah, and then there's other brackets right behind that.
Yeah,
what would the
two
next
others,
level be?
Okay. Two others today. So $32,001 to $44,000. That gradually would go up to 50% of your Social Security benefit will be taxable. Now, usually we hear a thudder in the crowd, and sometimes people pass out because they think it means you're in a 50% category or 50% bracket. It's actually not what it means. What it means is half that Social Security that you're receiving is going to be subject to taxation at your current tax rate. Now, if we're currently working, we haven't filed for Social Security, we don't know what that number is, right? We may know what it is today, maybe 20, 25%, but we don't know in the future. I'm 54. I don't know what that benefit or that tax number is going to be 10 or 15 years from now. But we do know the calculation. So up to 50% of that would you be subject to taxation at that current rate. So again, $24,000 a year, 12,000 of that would be subject to taxation. You'd have to pay taxes on 12,000 at that current rate. And again, maybe that's 20% or whatever that number is. And then last but not least, if you're over 44,000 married filing jointly, up to 85% of that is going to be subject to taxation at that current rate. Now, the challenge is those numbers are very small. You know, if you're working part-time, if you have some rental income, if you're over 70 and a half and you've done a good job with your IRA, well, you've got to start taking your required minimum distribution. So many of our clients that have done well, say, for retirement, continue to stay active, maybe continue to work part-time, full-time, they're probably going to be in that third category very, very quickly, unfortunately.
And so, Mike, just to kind of take a step back and review that.
Sure.
I heard you say that, you know, it's kind of a gradual approach in between those brackets. So if I'm understanding you right, it's not like as soon as I'm married filing joint and I hit $33,000 of income that automatically 50% of my Social Security benefit becomes taxable, right? It's kind of it's a function of that calculation that you talked about, right?
Exactly. Yep. Just like, you know, from a tax level, you know, it's not, you're right in X, it's gradually building up to that. So the max would be 50% if you're right at that $44,000 level. If you're more down to the 33, 34, then certainly the percentage is going to be a little bit lower.
So, Mike, I think you use the terminology, and I think it's right, that up to 50% or up to 85% of a benefit can be of a Social Security benefit can be taxed. It's not that people are in a 50 or an 85% tax bracket, but it's up to that amount of their benefit could be taxed. I think that's exactly one of the most common mistakes I hear people making. So let's turn the corner a little bit, Mike. Let me ask you about working, because there are a lot of boomers who are currently receiving Social Security benefits who are still working and earning income. Should they be cautious?
They should. I mean, it depends if they're continuing to work full time. They're making a nice living. They're going to continue to make a nice living. They may be want to be aware of the fact that their benefit may actually be reduced, and in some cases may be dramatically reduced. If they continue to work at, say, 62, 63, making a good living and file for their Social Security benefit. So, for example, if I'm 62 years of age, I'm concerned about Social Security, I want to turn on my Social Security benefit, but I'm making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year, my benefit may be dramatically reduced, because today the cap is $16,920. So the idea behind that is I can file for my Social Security as early as 62, continue to work. Maybe I'm working part-time 3 days a week or something. If I make less than that cap, then I'm fine. My Social Security benefit's not going to be reduced. But if I literally go to $16,922, I'm $2 above, my Social Security check goes down by a dollar. Another $2 above goes down by a dollar. So rather than scratch your head and kind of do the math, what we tell folks is if you're making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year, your benefit may be reduced in half, if not even larger than that. So, you know, it becomes a challenge. Now, the year that you turn full retirement age, so, you know, my full retirement age is age 67. I'm on the fence and I think, you know, gosh, that year that I turned 67, I'm going to file earlier. I'm going to file knowing that I'm going to reach full retirement age sometime this year. The cap is still in place, but it's a little higher. It's $44,880. Now, if I go over that cap by $3, they draw down a dollar. Another $3, they draw down a dollar. So it's not to say it's a penalty, but I always think in the back of my mind, to some extent, it's a penalty or an incentive basically not to file early and continue to work. Now, the good news is at age 67 in my case, or 66 and 2 months, have a client out there that's full retirement age, 66 and 2 months. Once they reach full retirement age, they can earn a dollar, they can earn $10 million. Their benefit's not reduced. It's only prior to full retirement age that there may be a benefit reduction. So you've got a client that retires at 67, couple months into it, says, you know what, this isn't right for me. I'm going to get a job driving Uber, or I'm going to discover some product, whatever it is. You know, I'm going to go back and consult. They can earn an unlimited amount of money. It really doesn't matter. Their benefit's not reduced. It's only prior to full retirement age, if they file, continue to work, we need to be aware of this cap. And it's truly just your earned income. But again, those caps, I think you'd agree, are pretty low, unfortunately.
So, Mike, I think it's important for people to realize. Now, I know there's a mechanism where if your benefit is reduced, that eventually you would be repaid some of those lost benefits. So it's not like you lose them forever. But in theory, the reason why people are filing early is because they want the cash flow. And in this case, the exceeding those income limits would reduce that current income flow, right?
Yeah, exactly. I always think of it as kind of insult to injury, right? So I file early, I'm getting a reduced benefit. And then, gosh, a couple months in, I get a check and it's even lower and gradually goes lower and lower because I need to continue to work. So that's where it really becomes an opportunity to sit down and say, before I do anything, do I really need this income, knowing the fact that if I continue to work, it may not be $800 a month. It may, in fact, come out to $200 a month. Now, does it really make sense? Because I may get that money back once I turn full retirement age, but I've also still filed early. So I'm always going to be at a lower dollar amount than a friend, a relative, a neighbor, regardless of what happens in the future, because I took some action to 62 as opposed to potentially waiting.
So, Mike, you know, one thing I want to go back to, which we talked about kind of at the beginning of this podcast, was this concept of modified adjusted gross income. And I just want to make sure that I heard you right, because as we're determining how much of our benefit is taxable, did you say that tax-exempt income is included in that calculation?
Yeah, that's included in the modified adjusted gross income. So that's kind of, again, insult to injury, isn't it? Unfortunately.
Yeah. It's kind of when is tax exempt income not tax exempt, right?
Yeah, it's not that you'll pay taxes on that, but I guess indirectly it's used in that calculation, which, you know, it always concerns me because as generally as we get a little bit older, we start to think more conservatively in our investments. And sometimes being too conservative, you know, may actually impact us negatively. So that's where I think the value of the advisor is so important to say, let's look at our investments today. And there may be an opportunity to think about some different ways to invest and be a little bit more diversified where it actually does help them down the road from a tax perspective. But instead of trying to scratch your head, I always encourage folks, let's talk to our tax person. Let's get a team of people in place before we do anything. Just because I read on the internet or I saw something on TV or I went to one of these, you know, things that says, hey, there's a million different ways to choose or elect. That's great. That's all hypothetical information. I want to sit down and talk to somebody who knows myself, knows my wife, knows my kids, and knows really what I'm trying to accomplish. You know, sometimes it's tough to explain, but I think if you have the relationship with someone, they can kind of understand and say, all right, here's your position. Do you really need that money? Knowing some of the negatives. Now, again, you know, there's no right or wrong. The client needs to sleep at night. Maybe the client has some intention for some of that money. They're just adamant that that's the option. There's no right or wrong. But I think the key is really educate them as to what their options are and put them in the best position to say, okay, I'm comfortable. I know there's some negatives, but there's also some positives to my option. So I'm gonna choose that option.
So, Mike, sometimes when we talk about, I guess I'm trying to think about how advisors should help clients from a general approach to Social Security taxation, right? Because many times I'm sure you're approached by clients or advisors who have clients who have a pension and are still working, and they have a considerable amount of income still coming into the household. You talked about those levels, for example, married filing jointly at 32 and 44,000. You're not going to tell someone to stop working just so they can avoid Social Security taxation, right? But kind of, how do you approach this question about taxation in general? How can people potentially reduce the amount of benefits that are subject to taxation, if they even have that flexibility?
Yeah, it's probably something that we do on an annual basis, right? I know I talk to my CPA every year about, you know, ways to reduce my taxation, and nothing's ever positive, unfortunately. But I think in this case, I think there's an opportunity to say, you know, let me think about my sources of income in retirement. Am I receiving some money from pension, as you mentioned? Am I receiving some money from Social Security? And to fill in the gaps, where am I taking money from a personal standpoint? Is it my 401k? Is it an after-tax account? And one option in particular, it's not right for everybody, but it may be an opportunity as an advisor to just maybe re-educate clients on the option of a Roth IRA. So if the client has some money in a Roth and needs, say, $200 a month, The good news today is when you think about the calculation, as we mentioned before, the good news is the Roth IRA, that $200 a month, would not be includable in that calculation. Or if I had money in my 401k, but in the Roth option of my 401k, and I start drawing down that option, again, that would not be includable. So, you know, maybe a tax-free loan from a life insurance company if they offer me something on my life insurance policy. But barring that, there really isn't much that you can do. But I think, you know, thinking about that and saying, how do I get into this option the most efficient way possible from a tax perspective? Again, it doesn't mean we want to convert all our money to a Roth IRA. But for the right client, the right situation, at least sitting down and talking about that and saying, you know, let's think about diversifying from a tax perspective prior to filing for Social Security to put us in this position to really think about ways that we can minimize from a tax perspective. And I think, as we mentioned, some of those, the numbers are so low that there may not be anything you can do. Again, when you turn 70 and a half and you have to start drawing down your IRA through an RMD, gosh, for some of our clients that are blessed, their RMD may be close to that amount, let alone everything else. So for those that are, you know, close to it, I think it's an opportunity to have a conversation. But I think advisors, at least knowing what the options are, is there anything that we can talk about? Is there any things that we can kind of think about from a planning perspective that can maybe put us in a little bit better position? Again, some clients, there may not be anything we can do, but just having that knowledge base, I think, is important.
Yeah, I think that's right, Mike. I think, you know, clients can look at their income sources and say, which ones really can't I change? Things like employment income, for example. Again, it would kind of be shooting yourself in the foot to say, why don't I give up my income to save on my Social Security benefit taxes? That's a little bit ludicrous. Or pension income, for example, is something that's pretty inflexible. But maybe on the margins, when you look at where you're pulling discretionary income, if you would, maybe there is something that could be done with a Roth or something like that that may save a few bucks. I think, generally speaking, though, what we find is that usually we're more in a position about educating people about why they're being taxed, what they are. Whether or not there is any flexibility in terms of what they can do, I think they're at least grateful that the advisor and it works with the tax professional, at least to help them understand what they're being taxed on, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think that puts them in a better position. They're more comfortable after that as well.
Well, and, you know, connected to that, Mike, is obviously, you know, even what we talked about today, this area of taxation is kind of tricky. And advisors have to be careful that they don't get caught in a position where, you know, it looks like they're kind of sorting this out on their own. And in addition to things you already suggested, what do you usually suggest to advisors as they provide guidance to their clients on this topic?
I think it's, you know, kind of the summary of what I mentioned. I think it's an opportunity to have a conversation. Think about the source of income in retirement. Really sit down and say, okay, SSA or Social Security is one portion of it, but where are our other sources of income? Let's do an inventory. Let's do a checkup and just make sure we understand where everything is. You know, because the last thing you want to do is get surprised by, oh gosh, I forgot to tell you about that account years ago I had with a friend of a friend. And that negatively impacts everything. Because the client's going to look at the advisor and say, you know, how am I in this position now? Well, it's because we never knew about it. So I think the opportunity to have an honest and open conversation, let's think about consolidation. Let's think about at least exploring and identifying all our sources of income and retirement, how those work together. It's worth having that conversation. And again, I would include the tax person in that conversation too. If I do this, what happens? If I do that, what happens? One of the things I always try and compare Social Security to, John, in a seminar, is I'll ask people in the meeting, you know, who here is a recipient of a pension? And the numbers are getting lower and lower. Years ago, it used to be everybody raised their hand. Now it's, you know, certainly far less. But I ask those people that are receiving a pension to probably think about the opportunity with a pension. They probably have done some math behind the scenes, whether it's a online tool that's available or sitting down and talking to somebody saying, when should I take my pension benefit and what's the best benefit for me? I think you want to think about Social Security exactly the same way. Put that same work, that same investigation time into your Social Security, just like a pension, and say, what's the best situation for me? What's the best situation for my spouse? What is it ultimately we're trying to accomplish? And then based on that, you know, we can kind of come up with a good time frame. And again, those other sources of income, I think it's so important. you know, it doesn't mean consolidation doesn't mean you have to bring everything in with one, but it does mean the fact that you want to clean up some of those older accounts, right? You want to put us in a better position to at least make sure everybody understands what's available, where is it going to come from, how's it going to come, and then let's come up with a strategy that makes sense.
Well, Mike, I think in addition, I know you mentioned kind of reaching out to the client's tax advisor, but maybe another thing an advisor can do is kind of put together a couple of different ideas in taxes that always seem to be a sticking point with their clients, and then use that as an outreach to local tax advisors to say, hey, you know, I know we haven't done a lot of business together, but I have a lot of clients that are confused around the area of Social Security benefit taxation, or if there's some other tax situation that is common to an advisor's clients, and being able to reach out to local professionals to say, would you be open to my giving you a call sometime if I have a client that is concerned about this, so that maybe you could help them out as well, and we could work together with these clients. So in a way, looking at this area of taxation and looking at the need for an outreach to a tax advisor, it might make sense to build that circle of influence, if you would, with local professionals. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. And that way you kind of become the go-to team in the area. I think it's a great opportunity, and maybe it furthers itself to doing seminars down the road and partnering up. Yeah, I think the need is there. As we do seminars around the country, we find that most folks don't really know some of this stuff. So I think the need is there. And with the numbers growing as boomers, more and more boomers entering that next phase, the need is just going to be greater and greater.
So, Mike, our time together is about to end. But before we discontinue, are there resources that can help advisors and clients in the areas that we talked about today?
Yeah, I think a number of them. SSA.gov is a go-to resource for me. I think they do a phenomenal job. I think, you know, with Hartford Funds, we've got some great tools and resources on our website, hartfordfunds.com/SS. We've got some, there's a 7-question brochure that we've developed, you know, common questions that clients have. And then more importantly, there's a great workbook that, you know, advisors can share with clients to kind of go through the exercise. And what's great about the workbook is very high level. I think sometimes these things get too intense where we're struggling with different numbers. This is a great opportunity to think about your source of income in retirement. You know, what are you thinking about from a Social Security perspective? And then put them in the best position going forward to kind of go through the exercise and say, okay, I'm a little more comfortable now. I think any of these conversations too, John, it's really the beginning of a conversation. It's rare that you'll meet somebody, you'll talk to them for 10 minutes, and then they're fully prepared for Social Security or fully prepared for the next phase. I think it really is an ongoing conversation, and knowing that and saying, okay, you know, maybe a little bit at a time, let's begin the process, let's begin the conversation. But I think having those tools and resources at your availability, and, you know, I think one of the best resources advisors have is their existing clients. It's a great way to build up that knowledge base in your book to say, next time I talk to someone who's maybe approaching Social Security, you can start to think about, gosh, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, they're similar situation to the people I'm talking to now. Here's why they chose Social Security. Here's why they chose the age that they did. And here's, you know, what made sense for them. Now, it may not make sense for that person, but I can think of that as that knowledge base behind the scenes, and use that resource to my advantage to say, here's some clients in the area that are similar situation. And here's why they did what they did. Again, let's talk about the pros and cons.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, Mike. And hey, I want to thank you again for being with us today.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
And again, the resource site that Mike mentioned with Hartford Funds is our website, hartfordfunds.com/SS. Again, hartfordfunds.com/SS. From all of us at Hartford Funds, we want to thank you for listening. We will talk to you again soon on our next episode of the Human-Centric Investing Podcast.
This podcast is intended for use by financial professionals or in conjunction with the advice of a financial professional. It is intended to be educational in nature and should not be construed as individual investment advice or a recommendation or solicitation to buy, sell, or hold any security or to adopt any investment strategy. It does not constitute legal or tax advice or fiduciary advice pursuant to ERISA rules. Hartford Funds does not provide tax advice. Shareholders should consult with their own tax advisor about their particular situation.